sifter.com.au.
Hello, this is Lightmap from Sifter, our interview show. I'm Gianni. Today, we're chatting to the creator of Platformer, which is inspired pretty heavily by Sonic and Mega Man, and boy, does it wear those influences proudly. Sue Edisham, solo developer of Berserk Boy, is my guest. Before we jump into that, let's find out what's been making the news this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's news podcast.
Hi, I'm Kyle Paletto.
And I'm Fiona Bartholomaeus.
And here are the top stories this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast for Sunday, 28th of April.
Embracer is dead. The company will split up into three parts as CEO eats crow after the capitalist implosion reaches a conclusion.
Escape from Tarkov players are up in arms as developers introduce a $250 pay-to-win mode.
Fortnite will let you block those sweaty emotes with strangers that were just a little bit too mean if you want to.
And Fallout 76 hits a massive player milestone after the launch of the TV series.
You can get every episode of Walkthrough for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or on our website sifter.com.au every Sunday.
You're listening to Lightmap, interesting conversations with video game creators.
Did you grow up blasting your way through Green Hill Zone or the Casino Night Zone? Maybe you spent hours defeating the nefarious schemes of Dr. Wily. These colourful platformers hold a really fond place in the hearts of many, including Sue Edisham, solo developer of the new Berserk Boy, where you blast through levels, switching elemental powers as you go. Sue, thank you for joining us on the show. Appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, mate. Thank you very much for having me.
What is Berserk Boy and how does it play?
So Berserk Boy is an action platformer, and it plays basically, it may look a little bit like Mega Man, but it plays very different. It uses like heavy impact and speed to attack your enemies. It's a set as a linear level base structure, but it has like light Metroidvania elements, which encourage backtracking and unlocking new forms. And a lot of that show, don't tell sort of stuff in stages where you know you can just come back and explore. So yeah, it's kind of like a mishmash of like everything that was like kind of cool back in the old days, like Sega, yeah, Nintendo, GBA sort of stuff. So yeah, that's basically how I sum it up.
I can see a little bit in the background of your picture, a bit of the love that you have for these series in the background. So tell me, when did you fall in love with them? Tell me about what it was like to first play these games and why were they so special?
Yeah, so like, I've got like an older brother and my dad always like played Sonic. I grew up watching my brother play Mega Man X, and it wasn't until like I think maybe like middle school I got super obsessed with video games in general, like Sonic Adventure 1, Sonic Adventure 2, Dreamcast, Sega Saturn, all that stuff. And then I'd say like the DS is, it's strange, everyone thinks the X series is where I'm like super inspired from, but it's like GBA and DS for me. So like Mega Man Zero, ZX. And then, yeah, it was just like a big rabbit hole. Like, oh my God, there's more Mega Man games in the past. So like, yeah, I just like started jumping through and it just really got obsessed.
I secretly think the GBA and the DS were like a real creative renaissance on games, because of course there were all those titles that were like, you know, clearly taken from the previous generations and sort of updated for modern. But there was a lot of really clever stuff in that, don't you reckon?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, like it breeds creativity, those limitations, right? Because like you've got to work with that small screen and like pixels and all that. So it's just like, how can you make it as appealing as possible? I think some of the best art, like pixel art, is on the Game Boy Advance. So yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, 100%.
All right, so you fell in love with these games, but can you tell me what was it that really kept you playing again and again and again and wanting to jump into whatever next title they brought out?
I think I was a very big like mascot fan at the time. I liked drawing as well, and being able to like draw Sonic or like Mega Man and stuff was something that just kept me like obsessed with the franchise. So like, oh my God, Sonic looks slightly different in this, in from like Sonic Adventure 1 to 2. Oh my God, I need to draw the new style, or like Mega Man looks a little different here. So yeah, I just got obsessed with like the characters, I think. So yeah, I think that is actually what it is.
So it started with a love of the art.
I think so, yeah.
Must have been groundbreaking when Sonic got a scarf at one point. I think that was pretty incredible. And everyone's like, whoa, hang on a second, what are we doing?
Yeah, that was a weird one. Bold, but weird.
Bold. They haven't returned to it after that. They've left him left him basically naked. Tell me about that, how you sort of transitioned from, you know, that love of art and then deciding, hang on, it's easy enough for me to start making a game and continue to make a game. Like, what was that first step into the fan art sort of zone into I'm going to try and make something new?
Right, yeah. I think I picked up trying to make video games, I think it was like middle school or like the first few years of middle school. And it was just like terrible, like little mashup projects, or like on like Click Team, or I think it was like Games Factory, and nothing really like substantial. And then it was like, I think it was like my last year of university, I thought maybe I want to try and make video games properly. And then, yeah, it was like, oh, okay, if I actually apply myself, it's kind of doable. So then, yeah, I just started from there and just kept going and didn't stop, I guess.
How long have you been working on Berserk Boy? Is this the first main project you've made, or have you made a lot of other little bits and pieces before this?
Like commercially, I've worked on other projects. I'm actually working on a few projects at the moment, which are like unannounced. But in terms of like commercial release, this is like my first commercial release. Yeah. And yeah, it's coming on to 5 years now for Berserk Boy. So,
all right. So I've sat down in front of my TV. Maybe I'm playing on the Switch. What am I going to experience when I'm playing this game? And what is the sort of feeling that you're trying to capture for the players?
Yeah, I think you're going to definitely, there's like a high speed, like a adrenaline sort of vibe, because the music actually creates an amazing like atmosphere anyway. It's really upbeat. So it naturally makes the player just want to move around. Hopefully you get those like Saturday morning cartoon vibes with some of the story and how it progresses. And I also one thing I do want to try do is not make it as difficult as the Mega Man games, just because the barrier to entry is quite intimidating, I think, to play. Recommend Mega Man to any of my friends who don't like Mega Man. So yeah, I want it to be like a playable experience. Like you can finish it without the Mega Man struggles. I think Mega Man was really difficult anyway when I was a kid.
You know, but the thing is, when you're a kid, you basically only have about one or two games. So at least I did when I was back in the day. So you had infinite time to just keep trying because you had nothing else to play. So you might as well get through it.
Yeah, super true, super true. But I mean, these days, no one has time to play anything. They're like, oh, 20-hour campaign, not doing it. Or like flick on a game and then play something else. Or it's like Fortnite. So it's like, it's really hard to keep people's attention, I think, through like a whole campaign. So I don't know.
So, I mean, looking at some of those things you've had to change and kind of modernize, I know there is even like you've kind of can choose the way that the game unfolds as a more modern play style and a more sort of classic style. Tell me about the things you change in order to make it more accessible for audiences who have got plenty of choice and maybe not as much time as they would like to play games.
Yeah, no, for sure. We do care about like accessibility and people being able to just like play it anyway. So yeah, we have the modern mode, which is like infinite retries. You don't have a game over screen. We have obviously the retro mode, where it's more like you the enemies are a little tougher, and you have a set amount of lives, and you can like upgrade and buy more or like get them through score. We also have like an accessibility mode called no death mode, where like your health just turns golden and you don't die, so you can just like play through the whole game without dying. So yeah, that's it. I just want people to like be able to get through it. That was my biggest aim with these platforms, because I know some of them are just like too much of a commitment, I think, like especially today. So yeah, I don't know. I want people to be able to play it.
I mean, I played a lot of games. I played a lot of these games back in the 90s, but I absolutely love these modes that have been turned on now, or things that make it more easy to get through. I'm really not afraid of an easy mode now. I really love it because it just means you can actually get to see these things. And for me, I found the challenge was like pretty reasonable, but you know, I think turning on the no death mode might be a good way for a lot of people, especially for younger players who don't have the history with this sort of series, and you know, just aren't used to playing games that really were designed to steal money out of you in an arcade, just about.
Right, exactly, yeah. And I feel like a lot of people underestimate like platformers, like you do need to have like the hand-eye coordination. There are like input, like that, like you need to be able to hit the diagonal at the right time. There's a lot of things I feel like I feel sound so old saying this, like modern gamers don't actually like need to do anymore because obviously everything's like 3D and like super, I don't know, I feel Berserk Boy needs some sort of like middle ground to like appease for like the retro and modern. So yeah, accessibility options are like the thing to do, I think.
You've got a sort of an elemental wheel and you can move through different powers as you're going through there. You know, when you change, the protagonist blasts into a new suit of armor and you're moving all around the place. Tell me about designing those abilities and how did they kind of come about? Like what, you know, do you think, okay, I need this particular type of ability and what element can I match to that? Or was it the other way around?
Yeah, amazing question. I think it came elements first. So it was just like, you know, the standard like main elements and then, yeah, create around that. And it was just basically like, how many things can I like get in here? Like I want hand-to-hand combat. I want throwing stars. I want, you know, flying around. So it was just basically like, being able to put all my ideas into like one thing. Again, it's like a lot of people tell devs like, don't make like the thing you want to make for your first game, but I've tried to make games before that just end up like in the shadow realm. So it's like, this is like my first time doing something I wanted to do. And I feel like I just made it all the way through. So yeah, I just put everything I loved in there. So yeah, that's how it ended up being like, I don't know.
Who doesn't love a firepower, you know, a lightning power? I think that's what I used to pretend when I was running around the playground at school. You know, tell me a little bit about that, because obviously, yeah, that is the prevailing advice, is that you should start small. You should work on little things and just ship them. And, you know, you've been working over this after not last 5 years or so, you were saying, what it's like to kind of keep working on that project when I'm sure a lot of people said, hey, just like cut it back, just go a little bit smaller, throw something up on itch or something like that.
Oh yeah. No, it has its challenges, like staying motivated and everything. But I think it's good. I feel like if you fall in love with it and you really do love it, like it's not an issue to like get up and draw the same thing or work on the same thing. Or like I truthfully, I don't really mind. And I'm actually like a little bit sad it's coming to an end in terms of working on it. But yeah, no, I haven't really minded. I just fell in love with it. So but I do know you're not supposed to do that. But my advice would just be like, do whatever you can get you to the finish line, to be honest.
You know, talk to me about the collaboration that you've got, because you've got a pretty cool collaborator who's done the music, someone that people would have loved, one of the best 2D platformers of the last couple of years. You've got T. Lopez on, who did the music for Sonic Mania. How did you start working together? Did you just slide into the DMs and went from there?
So, yeah, he's really, really good, by the way, and really happy to be working with T. Yeah, the story of how we started working together is it's not super like cool or anything. It's like I posted some artwork on Twitter of like a concept piece. It was just like some background and like the main character. And I think T just said some like looks cool or something. And obviously then I was just like, oh my God, T responded to one of my posts. So I messaged him like, hey, thanks for the comment. This isn't a real thing really, but if it is, let's work together. And he was like, yeah, let's do it. And then I hit him up like, hey, do you actually want to do something? And then yeah, he made some music for it and it's just been like really good since. So yeah, I don't know, I can't really like pinpoint what happened, but
so sounds like you did though. It sounds like you're just like, oh, there we go, just send a cheeky little message. And
yeah, I know there's probably more bits and bobs, but I feel like that was like the main
What was the brief for the soundtrack? Did you just go, here's the level, go wild? Or was it a bit more back and forth?
No, you were pretty much spot on with the first one. I literally just sent artwork and said, this is the scenario. This is like, you know, the gist. And then he'd just be like, yeah, I get the assignment. And then send me something back, like, you know, whenever it was due, and just be like, yeah, it's brilliant. On to the next one. So yeah, it's pretty much like that.
And so it was like, okay, first draft, you're good. We're good. We're going. That's perfect. Is that sort of how it worked? Or was there anything that needed to change? Or you?
There were a few tweaks just for the correct sound. Like how crazy do we want this? Or like how atmospheric, do we want it to be atmospheric at all? Do we want any like cool downs? Do we want like, you know, any moments where it's like mellow? And I was just like, no, we want it to be like high octane all the way through. And then T did also make like remixes of the tracks as well for like different acts and stuff. But the music is there is a lot of like cool moments with the music that which we did talk a little bit more about. But in terms of, like, the general gist, it was just like, yeah, once we got the assignment sorted, he just like cracked on with it and pretty much knew exactly what we wanted.
Nailed the vibe and then you were good to go.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Platformers are a sort of a genre where it kind of comes in and out of favor. I think we've seen a lot of Metroidvanias, and I've seen some people kind of immediately look at this and think this is more of a Metroidvania than it actually is. It feels like more like a traditional platformer to me. And I'm just curious about when you were making the game and thinking about where this sits in the continuity of platformers, what sort of things you wanted to do and wanted to communicate to the player. When someone's on Steam, they watch a little brief trailer and they click through a few screenshots, but how do you sort of communicate what sort of game it's going to be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a good one. It's tough. Originally I really wanted to make a Metroidvania, but there's a lot of things about Metroidvanias that I struggle with, and design wise I didn't want to tackle it anyway. So hence why there's like just the elements of like backtracking and stuff. There's no long extending corridors or stuff like that. I don't know. It's tough. I mean, I put in the bio, Berserk Boy is an action platformer with Metroidvania. So like, I try to make it clear, but I don't know. People like the idea of the backtracking, I think, and it's kind of, I don't know. I hope they're not too upset when it's not like heavy Metroidvania. But
Sonic fans and Mega Man fans are so passionate. I'm sure you know, you probably went in on all the forums and even back before then when people would go around there. Can you tell me about, have you been able to tap into the people who loved those games? Has that been a part of this process for you?
Yeah, so weirdly, not really for Mega Man, but for Sonic, yeah, I used to do a fair bit of fan art for Sonic on my socials, and they did start getting a bit of traction from Sonic community. I don't even know if they knew I was making a video game. I think they just liked the Sonic pictures, and then like would be like, cool, 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 cool. And then I'd be like, can you wishlist my game? And then just never hear from that. So I don't know. I don't think really, but I think when they see it, they can like, see I like those games. So
if you were given the Sonic IP to make a game in, what would you do?
I'd probably make something like a Ori the Blind Forest, like Metroidvania or something, where Sonic can like progress his abilities, and it's like maybe Rayman Legend-esque, but more Metroidvania, so like it builds on itself. I don't know, I think about this a lot, and Sonic has loads of cool moves and stuff, but yeah, I think it'd be refreshing if it was in a world like that, and there was a big sprawling map and Sonic still maintained his speed, but there was more skill involved in the platforming.
Is there more to that? Have you ever tried briefing, making up a little mock-up or anything like that? Or
I've made loads of like terrible Sonic fan game. Well, like they don't even see. I mean, like when I was young, I'd like smash anything together. I remember I watched Harry Potter, and then I'd be like, oh, I want to make a Sonic Harry Potter fan game, and then I'd like start making. It was just anything. It was just wild. But no, nothing like formal or like pitch worthy or like anything I could show anyone.
That must be great. I mean, it must be great though, because like, we played a lot of it. We didn't have a Sega back in the day, but we had like a neighbor that did, and we had a PlayStation. So we'd go and like just move over to each other's houses and play they come over and play Final Fantasy at our house, and then we'd go over their house and play, Alex Kidd, and we'd play Sonic and all of these other games as well. And, I'm just curious about your when you're trying to make something which is obviously in an homage, it has a reverence to these games, how do you do that in a way that also is its own thing? Like was that a consideration for you when you're making this game?
Yeah, 100%. I see comments a lot like on Twitter or Reddit where it's like Berserk Boy to me seems like the thing closest trying to the game that's trying to be closest to Mega Man, but also the furthest from Mega Man in how it plays, or like it reminds me of Sonic, but it doesn't. Like I understand what they're saying because it lulls you into making it think that it's like a run and gun or something. But yeah, it's not. It plays different. But yeah, that was like a conscious effort. I didn't want to make like a running gun, complete like a Mega Man, full on Mega Man style game. It was just like the aesthetics. I really like those. So yeah, and then I wanted the playstyle to be fresh and a bit different from what people were expecting. So I think it subverts expectations, but I don't know. That's just what I'm like. I'm like stalking some like comments here and there, so I'm kind of seeing it. So
doing a sneaky like if you see a comment that's on the right page.
Yeah, they get it. Okay.
Tell me about making this game over the last 5 years, because it's been a pretty weird couple of years. I think it's pretty fair to say. You know, you've mostly been making this game by yourself. So tell me about how you kind of keep working on it.
So I'm the only full-time person on the project. I have had, so at the moment there is Chris as well. He works part-time and helps out with programming. And yeah, he's been on the project for a while, but we've had T, who does the music, on for a very long time. But in terms of like keeping going, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I need to make something or I'll get really bored. Like even on my days off, I'll be like, oh, I might as well make something. Otherwise I'm wasting the day. So
yeah. Is it the thing that you keep coming back to though? Like, you know, when you've got a bit of downtime, it's the thing that keeps drawing you in.
Yeah. Just because I love to see it progress. Like there's no feeling like sitting down and making progress. Like I really like making progress, and because I do like the artwork or animations, or I can like do the level design as well. It's like if I'm feeling a bit of like a burnout in terms of art, I can feel a little bit inspired and do some levels, and it's like, oh, it feels fun to just see a bit of progress. So I guess it's that. I guess it's seeing like little bits of progress keeps me motivated.
We're only a little bit out from when the game is going to be playable for people. And I'm just curious at this moment, after we've been working on this project for such a long time, how does it feel to be here?
Yeah, it's like the one part of development I never thought about. Like I'd always think about like porting starts now, and then like we have need to get the localization out and you do the UI and all that stuff like would be in the thought process throughout like development. But this part I never thought about. It's really weird because like, yeah, it's on like a countdown now. So I don't know. I honestly don't know. I got my first glimpse of like what people's reaction was during the Next Fest when the demo came out. And it's pretty exhausting, like looking at everything, because it's hard not to look for everything. But I don't know. I'd summarize it as by exhausting. I'm tired.
This project's done. What comes next for you? Are you just going to take a rest, or is the creative itch going to grab you and you'll be back making something else?
I'll probably relax for a bit, and then yeah, I do have stuff I want to work on, but I'm worried in case I give myself like burnout or something by like jumping straight into something. But yeah, I definitely want to make more cool things.
Well, this is definitely a cool thing, and especially if you're like me, you grew up on these games, it makes you feel like a kid again. And that's a pretty high praise, I reckon. So thank you so much for joining us on Lightmap. It's been a pleasure to chat to you and reminisce.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, mate. It's been a lot of fun.
That's Berserk Boy. You can find it on Steam and Switch. And you can find more information by heading to berserkboygames.com or give it a search on your favorite social platform.
Chris Button here from Drop Rate, Sifter's video game review podcast. Unicorn Overlord might have a strange name, but don't dismiss its tactical prowess.
It uses a tactics mode, which is similar to the Gambit system that was in Final Fantasy XII for your squad mates. And you can say, okay, well, you know, Hodrick, who's my legionnaire with the big shield, I want him to prioritize protecting the back row. They're going to take the most damage. If they take a physical hit, they're going to go down, but I need them to be protected. So you can get quite granular with this, and I reckon you could build some pretty wild builds that are totally game-breaking, but it's kind of the fun of the tactical squad-based gameplay in Unicorn Overlord.
Tune in to Drop Rate to find out why Unicorn Overlord might just be one of 2024's sleeper hits. Available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Australia's best video game podcast.
This is Lightmap. Get every episode free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and sifter.com.au.
Sifter is produced by Kyle Paletto, Fiona Bartholomaeus, Courtney Borrett, Daniel Ang, Adam Christou, and Chris Button. Mitch Lowe is our senior producer who edits this episode. And my name is Gianni DiGiovanni, and I'm Sifter's executive producer. Thanks to Audio Technica Australia for their support of Sifter. And hey, I'm talking to you. If you like this show or any of the shows that we do, there's pretty much one thing you can do, which is free. And it makes a big difference. It's giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. If you're listening on your audio platform, or even if you're not, maybe you're watching the video version, head on over there. No joke, it makes an incredible difference. And if you want to help more people find the show and learn about cool games like Berserk Boy, that's the way to do it. Rate us with 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. That's it. Super easy. It's a super cool thing to do. Everyone who knows you will think you're really cool for doing it. So looking forward to that 5-star review. That's all the time we have for now. I'll catch you on the next episode of Lightmap. Until next time, have fun.